Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Simpuga. This evening we'll look at elections in Africa, what it takes to have a free and credible election. And with us tonight are my colleagues. First of all, I have Blessing Zulu of VOA's Zimbabwe service. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. The pleasure is mine.
You're very much welcome. I also have Vincent Makori, Managing Editor, Africa 54. Once again, welcome back to the show.
As always, a delight to be
Thank
here.
Thank you very much. I also have regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula, who's joining us from Durban, South Africa. He's an independent political analyst. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas, and good evening, the panelists.
How are you doing?
Good evening.
Very fine. Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're very much welcome. As I said, tonight we're looking at elections in Africa. What gives in Africa as far as elections are concerned? Because in Africa, elections mean different things in different countries. This year alone, Africa is having almost a dozen elections. So far, we're almost halfway. But these elections reflect a new established norm of elections as the recognized means for selecting African leaders. The quality of these elections, however, continue to vary widely, with some merely serving as a ritual by leaders to maintain their claim on power. We've just had one last one in Malawi just last week. Before that, we had one in South Africa. We began the year with Nigeria, Africa's most populous nation there. So, gentlemen, let me begin on my in the studio here. Blessings, what do you make of African elections?
I think it's still a work in progress. It's good to see that at least where Suleiman is in South Africa, there were elections that many are saying were at least free and fair. But you go to Malawi, there are problems there with the opposition. Alleging that the elections were rigged. So it's still a mixed bag.
I see. Vincent, some fair elections, some accusations of rigging, some can even be worse.
Yes. The problem is that across the continent, in a great number of countries, of course, apart from South Africa, which has continued to do an exemplary job, the elections are rigged way before they are conducted, and they're rigged at different levels. First, we have an electoral commission, which is either controlled by the government or strongly influenced by the government. And then the other factor is that you don't have the proper infrastructure to facilitate a smooth election process. So we have people sometimes in certain parts of the country unable to travel safely and comfortably to areas of polling stations to cast their ballots. And, of course, the other level of rigging the elections way before is also the vote buying, where you influence the pattern of voting through buying people with very, very little, in fact, really very, very little, and that can determine what directions the elections go. And then finally, as we say, you know, again, the results are sometimes dependent on who's counting, who's counting those votes.
Well, that's true. Suleiman, as Blessings mentioned here, South Africa, nobody was arrested for going to the polls. Nobody was stopped from going to the polls. At least you had some breath of fresh air over there.
Very exemplary. And I think what South Africa is telling us is that, number one, Africans can organize, can manage, can finance a credible, transparent, free and fair election. The citizens, regardless of their literacy level, they know their literate, they know what their responsibility is, they treasure, they love, they treasure being citizens of a country and exercising their citizenship through voting. You get lines, you get people glued on TV waiting. For the past from Saturday, there has been nothing other than waiting for the cabinet to be announced until yesterday. the whole country was waiting anxiously to get a cabinet. Delegations were moving to the president, delegations from the business sector, delegations from the workers' sector, delegations, I mean, putting in their views because they know they are stakeholders in the fate of their country. So it is very, very, very wonderful to be part of a population like in South Africa where you see citizens very much concerned about the future of their country. And very, very well, it was a very good election, I can say. It is well settled. From tomorrow, business is starting.
I wish
many of our people on the continent would take a leaf from what we have here in South Africa.
Yes, and interestingly, you have a cabinet now, the first in Africa, which is half our women.
Exactly, because of the factors I've said, that the citizens know that they are stakeholders in the fate of the country. Women are more than half of the population. They have been able to lobby, and over time, they have been able to get the 50-50, which they have been lobbying for a long time, just because they are part and parcel of the whole system. They are not being given a favor. They are stakeholders. They hold equal share in the business of this country, South Africa.
Yes, and that's the most interesting part. You have in one corner of the continent where things can go smoothly, people to access their right to choose their leaders. Then there is the other extreme end in countries like Uganda. Let me mention one or two or three.
Yes.
Where an election comes, election season is the most dangerous season of the whole thing. People have to die, opposition candidates have to go to jail, they have to be beaten, they are not allowed to go on air. So, Zulu Blessings, what is it, the difference in the air in the country? Is it the water? Is it the food? What is it?
it's a very interesting point, because if you see what Suleiman is saying in South Africa, that the transition was smooth. You know, elections have consequences. That's what is important to note, because we had elections in Zimbabwe last year. The opposition is disputing those elections. And, you know, capital is a coward. No investors are going to Zimbabwe. The country has suffered tremendously, forcing thousands and thousands of Zimbabweans to flee and go to South Africa, to Zambia, to Mozambique, because of the unresolved political question. So if you see what is happening in South Africa, you see what is happening in Zimbabwe, it clearly shows that, you know, there is need for free and fair and credible elections. For nations themselves to progress. But I think the point to note is that there seem to be no peer review mechanisms in Africa by either the Southern African Development Community in the southern part of Africa or the African Union itself, you know. Mm-hmm. So if they... But they have like protocols on elections, how to conduct elections. But it appears that they are afraid to enforce, you know, their agreements. Hence, you have these differences.
I see. It appears, briefly before I proceed,
yes.
He mentioned something that tickled my mind. There's a peer review kind of thing. Some regions are more cursed than others. If you take, like, for instance, the eastern part, eastern horn, central there, it's dangerous even to go to elections. Yes. But you go ahead with your point.
Yes. In fact, you know, the reason why elections happen the way they happen in Africa is deliberate. In fact, you don't need any peer review to determine how elections should be conducted. All African leaders and the stakeholders are aware of how elections are conducted. How is it that a country like India, of a population of 1 billion, can have an election that is extremely democratic and have a result? What happens is a deliberate manipulation and interference in the process so that those who are in power can continue staying in power. For example, in most of these African countries, the politicians who are in power don't want things to change because their only concern is how they can continue staying in power. Nobody's stupid to tell me that they don't know how an election can be conducted in a country to make sure that it's peaceful, it's orderly, and that the results can, to a large extent, be accepted. Everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. These guys are smart. These guys are educated. They're wildly. They have traveled. They know everything. In fact, some of the officials of these countries have traveled to observe elections in other countries. They know exactly how this can be done. They don't want it to be done right. They don't need anybody to teach them because they already know. But they like it when citizens are ignorant enough to think that governments are supposed to control the electoral process such that the ruling party can determine who can hold a campaign, who should participate in an election, whereas in real true democracy, the ruling party or the government is not supposed to be the one that determines who participates in an election. That is supposed to be the preserve of another body that controls the electoral process like a referee. Now, the government cannot act as the referee in an election, and you expect the results to be fair. So the reason why I talked about the rigging of election way before, it is because they have deliberately decided to make sure they control the electoral process through the Electoral Commission. They have deliberately decided to undermine the participation of other organs, other parties, freely and independently so that they can sell themselves to the people. They have deliberately decided to manipulate the citizenry by framing these elections like it is the business of the government. So, in short, if I may just end it there, this particular thought, there is no reason for any country to have messed up elections. It is deliberate, it is planned, it's intended, and in fact they want it to continue like that. It's out of selfishness.
Talking of being out of selfishness, there is another element people have brought up, is that there are countries or leaders whose sole aim from the beginning was to grab power and hold it. Some of these began as gunmen. Say, take a country like Uganda and Rwanda, DR Congo, Sudan, Egypt. These are people who grabbed power by the force of the gun and then tried to transition to democracy. But then that gunman mentality remained in them. Suleiman, don't you think so?
It is, Douglas, the problem we have had on the continent is one. We have failed to categorize the two kinds of leadership which we have on the continent. As you said, we have got a category which is of gunmen, of warlords, of fortune hunters, people who captured power purposely for their personal interests. And then we have got genuine leaders, people who are leaders. There is no need, as Vincent has said, there is no need to rig an election. You have been in power for 10 years. You have been in power for 5 years. You can pack your bags and go. President Kama is there. So many people have left leadership in Ghana. Jonathan of Nigeria is walking around freely. I mean, even Mandela, who would have been the greatest person, did not even stay a second term. So what excuse can you have as a leader to stay in power or to start rigging elections, to start defending yourself by doing all sorts of things which are for condemning, and a man with integrity who has led the country, you start bribing people, you start appointing people who are related to you or who are your friends to become officials of the Electoral Commission. I mean, that is going so low to a person who is a leader. Leadership is about bringing change in people's life, leaving a country better than where you left it, where you found it. So why should you stick in a country? What are you going to gain? So those are fortune hunters. As Vincent has said, whatever they are doing is well choreographed, is well organized. They know what they are doing. They captured power. They took power just to enrich themselves and their friends and their families. They are not there for the good of the people. The only unfortunate thing is that these conmen are able to con citizens, and the citizens come to believe that they are leaders, not knowing that they are fortune hunters. Even the external community, the external community or the international community, they are also able to coin it properly well, and they believe that these are leaders. Actually, the truth is that we have got fortune hunters and leaders.
I see.
Not that everybody is a leader in Africa.
I see. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and you are coming to you live from VOA Studios here in Washington. Tonight, we're discussing elections in Africa. Our panelists are my colleagues, Vincent Makori and Blessing Zuru, and another colleague in South Africa, Suleiman Mugula, who is an independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Mpuga, here in Studio One. Now, gentlemen, with time, things evolve, as people say. There's nothing that is constant apart from change. In April, we're supposed to have had an election in Nigeria. That actually didn't take place. People said, stood up and says, no way. Go away. Because this was a president who couldn't speak, who couldn't stand, who couldn't talk. I don't think he can even eat. Earlier on, the Zimbabweans pushed out Mugabe, although it was their case was slightly different because it was like pushing out, jumping from fire to frying pan or frying whatever. So are the people waking up and realizing that we must make a distinction between leaders and those what Suleiman calls fortune hunters?
I think it's still problematic because if you look at the change we are seeing now in Africa, it's quite unfortunate that it's actually not led by the people, but by the army.
Yeah.
You know, you have the situation in Sudan. For example, that ousted al-Bashir, one of the longest-serving leaders in the continent, is the same with former President Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe, that the army had to step in. And quite ironically, when people were trying to protest against Mugabe or al-Bashir, it was the army that was actually used to suppress those uprisings. So, I mean, really, the change that is led by the army is it's just cosmetic. You know, it's like applying lipstick on a frog.
Okay, it might even be worse, according to some people, because you see the situation in Egypt,
where
people stood up and then the army came, hijacked
the process.
Now they went back to, some would say zero, but now they may have gone back to minus two.
So, I mean, you go to Libya, it's still the same thing, right? People might actually demonstrate and then force the leaders to leave. The army comes and takes over. And then we go to, I don't prefer to call some of these elections, it's, you know, what I might call electoralism. It's just a ritual that you are going to the elections. But like Vincent said, they are rigged. You know the results. You know, like Stalin said, you know, those who vote do not matter. But the one who matters is the one who counts the votes. That's the problem.
So one thing I have to say is that the African leaders actually bring a lot of disrespect to the people of the continent of Africa. In fact, if you look back some time back, there was so much protest across the continent because some African leaders and Africans felt that they'd been insulted by somebody. But why do we sometimes find it difficult for African countries to be respected by the West and by other parts of the world? It's because of the African leaders, their actions, their conduct around election time and other times does not call for respect for the countries, for the continent, and for the African people. Because the things that happen are clearly stupid. And as we have observed over the years, nothing seems to change year in, year out. How in the world can you say that you do not learn from your mistakes and fix them? And here I'm talking about whether it is the opposition or those in government, the approach is the same. Everybody wants to just get into power. The military wants to get into power. Those in the opposition want to get in power. And once they're in power, they act exactly like those who came before them. And they don't want to change anything. And I can show you across the continent countries where the opposition that used to champion, you know, democracy and human rights and institutions and all that, once they got into power, they turned into the same dictatorial kind of regimes that they were fighting against. So Why does this happen? It's because as long as those leaders remain self-centered, as long as they're pursuing their personal interests like mercenaries who are there to take, will never think about the future, because that's one of the things I've observed over time. These leaders don't care about what will happen to their countries once they're gone. They don't plan for their future, the future of their countries. They're like a reckless father of a family who squanders all that would have been left to the family, but he doesn't care because when he dies, it's up to them. They will figure out. And that is what our leaders today in Africa seem to behave like. They don't care about what will happen to the country in the future. So while you say that there's an uprising across the continent, that there's hope that people are coming up, there are no institutions, as I keep saying. As long as you don't have institutions that can safeguard the freedoms of the people, you'll have an uprising today, you'll change the person at the head of the government, but the structures are the same. They will revert back to dictatorship or to military rule until and unless you have institutions that are strong enough to guarantee democracy, to guarantee human rights, respect of human rights. You will never have any change in most of the African countries.
I see. Suleiman, talking of institutions, it's an agreed upon fact that most of these leaders or misleaders or dictators on the continent, the first thing they do is destroy those institutions. We've seen this in Libya, we see it in Uganda, we see it in Rwanda, where the leader becomes the state. He's the central bank governor, he's the army is personal, the police is personal, the army is personal. So even if you dislodge him, as you say, as Wilson says here, nothing changes. So what indeed should people do? I mean, they can't create institutions when they're out of government, can they?
That is why Vincent is saying, is referring to it as the stupidity of leaders. Because the bottom line is, so long as you have not settled the leadership question, the country remains fragile. Fragile in the sense that whatever pretense you may put on, whatever you may pretend to have built, once the people rise up, they will destroy everything. That is why Libya is what it is. That is why Somalia is what it is. That is why Egypt went as it was. That is why we have got an impasse in Algeria. That is why we have got an impasse in Sudan. That is why we have got an impasse in Zimbabwe. Because the leaders themselves stupidly destroy the institution. The people lose confidence in the institution. And much as they have lost confidence in the institution, it will not stop them from rising up to overthrow the regime. They will rise up, whether these leaders want it or not. People in Rwanda, people in Uganda, people in Togo, people in Cameroon, people in Chad, whether we like it or not, they are going to rise up. Whoever is in leadership should know that time has run out. The biggest problem or the stupidity of it is that once they rise up without institutions whatsoever, there is either an impasse, which is hijacked by the military, or they destroy everything and then you get Libya or you get Somalia. So as Vincent has said, why should the leaders be so stupid to think that you can create your own world, your own heaven, whereas you are going to crash down with the whole country? Because they should have learned.
I wanted to.
The more you stick on power, once you collapse badly without an institution, when people have lost interest, when they have lost confidence in the police, in the army, in the judiciary, in the parliament, in everything, they just sweep away everything, and then there is total chaos. Just like the impasse we have in Sudan, Algeria.
And actually, before you go to Zulu, I just wanted to add on to that one of the things that stands out very clearly across the continent is that the African leaders, a great number of the African leaders, have no respect for the citizens that they rule over. They have no respect. They have a disdain for those citizens. And you can see in their actions. I mean, when a person in a wheelchair can insist that they want to be the next the president. They want to stay on to power. What are they telling the citizens of that country? That I am better than the millions of you out there. When a fellow, perhaps in Zimbabwe, who is over 90, who has been in power forever, still thinks he's the only person who can rule the country. When a person in Cameroon has been in power forever, spends half of the year in Switzerland, and comes home and says, I'm still the best thing that ever happened to this country. How much respect do you have for your citizens, for your people? Indeed, it is a clear evidence that they have disdain for the people that they rule over, and perhaps because they do not see a pushback, sufficient pushback from those citizens.
And blessings as we wind out, do you think that that contempt for the people, is that which may spark the whole thing? Because even the people don't like them too. People hate them, hate those leaders.
Yeah.
Of course, I think the one thing that African people must never lose is hope. I think they must continue to push for change, because if they don't, they will perish. And apart from the institutions that Vincent is talking about, even, you know, health institutions, most of these African leaders are now, you know, it's now a style. You're going to die in France, in... India, in Saudi South Arabia, Africa, you know, Belgium, you know, simply because even at home there is no basic health care. This is the disdain that they have for their people. And we are talking about countries that won their independence decades ago. But you still, sometimes even the colonial institutions were better than what we are seeing now.
They were better.
Now it's, you know.
I know one of Canada who said he doesn't trust hospitals in his country.
Exactly.
So even his grandchildren are delivered in hospitals in Europe.
Yes. Yeah. Mugabe's daughter was delivering kids in Saudi Arabia.
And the irony is, who's that? Isn't it Buhari who spent like half a year in London? The question is, how much money, how much taxpayers' money was spent?
Yeah.
That could actually be enough to build a hospital in Abuja that is good enough to treat that president. And that president goes to Britain to be treated by Nigerian immigrant doctors there because they cannot find well-paying jobs back home. What a shame.
Suleiman, 30 seconds. How do you see the future going forward? As Blessing says, there's hope. We should have hope.
The people of Africa, especially the youth, have to know that the continent, they are on their own. The international community is in conspiracy with the dictators. They hold elections only to legitimize the dictatorship. They are ruining the country, as my colleagues have said. The health systems have been destroyed. The infrastructure is destroyed. They don't care. They take helicopters and they leave the potholes. So the responsibility is on the youth to not rest, but to join the people of Algeria, to join the people of Sudan, so that these dictators, the rusted dictators in Uganda, in Rwanda, in Cameroon, in Togo, all these ones should face the same fate as Sudan and Algeria. They should be brought, they should be overthrown as quickly as possible so that they can take the country forward.
Can you share half a second, half 20 seconds each?
Quickly, if I may say, I think all citizens of Africa should fight for the establishment of institutions that will safeguard their freedoms before they can even go to an election. Don't go to an election that is already rigged. There's no point.
Of course, my message is to African leaders that a fly that does not heed advice will follow the corpse into the grave.
I see. Well, I hope they'll take that advice. Well, that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, and Blessing Zuru, and Suleiman Mbula, who's an independent publicanalyst based in Durban, South Africa. Tonight, our producer was Jackson Mufunganya, as usual, and our engineer was Nashwan Kale. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any or part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website, click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, wishing you all the best.
This is VOA.